A listener production.
Okay, are you recording?
Howdy. Welcome along to episode 81 of the Howie Games Part A. Thanks for tuning in. Love your work. This week's episode is like none the show has recorded before. It features leg-spinning legend Farwad Ahmed.
Gotcha!
And that is the end of Luke Wright. He held up on him a bit. Just spooned the most simple of catches back to Ahmed.
Farwad Ahmed is a wonderful man with a truly remarkable story. He was born in Pakistan and always dreamed of playing cricket for them. However, that story unfortunately was never meant to be. Farwad leaving his homeland fearing for his life. Arriving in Australia, Fuzz had his cricket dream, but precious little else. Seeking asylum, Farwad went through all manner of highs and lows, including in a 10-month period where he went from playing cricket for Hoppers Crossing, a suburban team in Melbourne's West, to playing for Australia.
Mystery, what is to be? So much more than meets the eye. Listen to me, time is your key. We find out by and by.
Fuzz's story, well, pretty much defies belief. It was a privilege to hear him tell it and made me really think about various issues Australia grapples with. Enjoy the life and times of Farwad Ahmed.
So when you search and then you find and know just where to go and thoughts that once used to cloud your mind, you see clearly and now you know. Mystery, what is to be revealed in King Selassie I. Come on, children, tread with me. We want to reach Mount Sinai.
Farwad Ahmed, welcome to the Howie Games. How are you, great man?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. We've spoke on various cricket grounds around the country about organising this, and it finally happens. I really appreciate your time, mate.
No worries, my pleasure.
Is it Farwad or Fuzz or Fuzzy? What are we going with here?
I don't mind.
I think Fuzz.
Yeah, Fuzz good, yeah.
Just, I think Fuzz.
It's related to cricket. So
I think Fuzz, exactly.
Yeah, I love
you've,
it, yeah.
You've just come, your typical day now, you've just come, tell me about your day today. You've come earlier on this morning from the Junction Oval.
Yeah, I came from overseas, so I'm a bit jet lagged. So I woke up like 4 a.m.
Right.
And pray morning prayer around 6 a.m. and then been awake, went to Junction, bowl a little bit, run, and went for Friday prayers and straight here to your studio. So
I'm excited to have you here. Where have you been overseas?
I went to PSL,
right.
Then stayed a little bit for with my family and just a little bit had a time off. So it was a busy, very busy year for me. A lot of traveling, a lot of cricket as well.
Yeah.
So I thought, let's have some time off. And now I'm back and kicking off myself and hopefully we'll be on the track soon and need to get fit and getting older, but yeah, gracefully with the time.
So, how are the leggies coming out at the moment?
Yeah, it's easier thanks to T20 cricket. So
yeah.
I would have been done a while ago, but T20 cricket make it easier for us. It's only 4 overs, so I keep moving myself. Actually, last year was pretty good. My body was really good. My skin photo, I think the best I have ever had in my whole life.
Okay.
And my 2K time trial was pretty good as well. So,
how long for your 2K time trial?
My best is 7:40.
7:40?
Yeah, so pretty good. For old man. So,
yeah. you mentioned a couple of things that I want to ask you about straight away. As you say, if you were playing cricket 10 years ago, your career would be done. But that is, it's a very different game these days, cricket. Just for our listeners that wouldn't understand, tell us the teams you played for and where you played cricket last year in 2018. So 2018 would have started for you with a big bash in the Sydney Thunder.
Yeah.
Where else did you go last year?
Well, I played Victoria, obviously.
Yep.
One day and 4 day cricket and then Shield cricket and then played Sydney Thunder. And then I went to play Canada. It's called Global T20. And luckily, I end up on the winning side. So
you won that. So what's it like cricket in Canada?
Was pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, Steve Smith played, David Warner played, and Chris Gayl, Andre Russell. So a lot of big names. Peter Siddle was there. Tim Saudi was there in our team. So all the Caribbean players, there was like a, I think there was something with Caribbean board as well, the Windies board. And there was second 11 of West Indies cricket as well.
And what type of grounds are they in Canada? What are you playing on?
The facilities weren't that great, but I think club level ground, maybe like a VTCA.
Okay.
Yeah, like this, not even like a great cricket ground.
So you won in Canada?
Yeah, Vancouver Knights. I played for Vancouver Knights. Chris Gayle was captain, so we have really a good side. So
who was captain?
Chris Gayle.
What's he like as a captain?
He was a good man.
Was he?
Good man, yeah. He really supported me there, so it was pretty good. But the wicket was really good. It was like I played on the wicket after a long time where it was like a spinning mile.
Oh, beautiful.
So I really enjoyed it, yeah. So that was actually a good start for me because I was out of contract from Cricket Victoria and I was struggling a little bit. So I have had a time off and I thought, what I'm going to do? And then I got a call from TKR, Trent Bago Knight Riders in the CPL.
Caribbean Premier League.
Yeah, and they says, we need you as a replacement for Shadab Khan. Shadab Khan wasn't available. So I said, well, I'm happy. I just want to play.
Yep.
I didn't even ask for money or anything. So,
huh.
And I have had a good preparation in Canada for that. And then I went straight to Caribbean after Canada and then, yeah, and finish on the winning side again with TKR.
And the most wickets in the competition, don't be modest.
Yeah, second most wicket in the Canada and most wickets in Caribbean.
And did you love playing cricket in the Caribbean?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Was my second tour, but the first time I played proper cricket there and good fun, great fun. The atmosphere was amazing, especially at Queen's Park where we played Trinidad. That was our home. So, yeah, the crowd was amazing. Every game was sold out. A lot of passion for cricket. People loved it. I think it's pretty good competition.
And so from the Caribbean Premier League, you came back to Australia?
Yeah, straight back home, Melbourne, and joined Victorian team for JLT Cup. Played last 4-5 games and finished on the winning side again. So.
Again, another victory for you?
Yeah, another victory for me. So it was amazing. Yeah. Played a few Shield games as well. Was pretty good. I bowled really well, both in the one day and Shield cricket, and then went to join the Sydney Thunder for Big Bash. So,
and then to the Pakistan Super League.
Yeah, for the first time, Pakistan Super League, and again finished on the winning side with Quetta Gladiators. So played with Waro, straight from Sydney Thunder to Gladiator together, so we have had an amazing time. So I bowled really well, actually, were there as well. Unfortunately, had a bad injury in the playoff game.
You got hit in the face.
Hit in the face. Jaw was fractured. Teeth were broken. Lip was ripped. But it took pretty long. I'm still sore. The teeth are not good. But I'm still very grateful and thankful because. There was not a major injury, eye or head or nose or cheekbone, you know. So, amazing year for me. Different. I love red ball cricket, but unfortunately I have to give up because there was no place for me in the Victorian side. And I thought if I can make it to the World Cup squad, that didn't happen. It is what it is, but I'm glad I'm playing some really good cricket around the world and still fulfilling my dream, and I'm really, really enjoying it.
Your dream is it's quite the story, Fuzz, which is why I've been trying to get hold of you to come on the show. So we go back to where you were first born, part of your remarkable story. Where were you born?
The place called Swabi. It's in the northwest of Pakistan, not far from Islamabad, from the capital. The province called like KPK, and small town, but very, very lush green, very fertile.
Cold up there? So it's getting up towards the mountains or not?
Yeah, it's not. It's a bit far from there. We are very close to the mountain ranges, but if you go further, like up for 1 hour drive, then where it starts very cold, like a snow and big mountains and like those Himalayas and the biggest tree ranges of the world, mountain ranges that they are meeting together there. So that's not far from there. So we are just at the bottom, but it's still lush green, rivers there, jungles there, mountains there. It's beautiful. It's nice.
What's the first thing you can remember, Fuzz, in your life? What's the first thing, cast your mind back to, that's the first thing I can actually remember?
It's just, I would say, the family environment there. Like we are just like the whole world is global village, but the people live in the town is like a family. Everyone knows each other.
Huh.
So someone comes from outside, you straight away just pointed out this guy's a stranger, straight away. So it's just like a family. It's still a big town, around 30 to 40,000 people live there, but you know everyone almost. So that's the main thing. So it's very, very like a, we do everything together, like a marriages or even the death ceremony and all those things together. So any like occasion on the, if this on a good side or on the bad side, we all together. So that's the main thing. And that's what you miss when you go to the Western country, you know, because everyone's so isolated in this country. There are positive and negative everywhere. It doesn't matter if you live in the first world country or on the third world country, you know, and everywhere there are positive and there are negatives there where you ever living. So there's something I really miss, and there's something I really, like I would say, I remember as well.
So your mum and dad, and how many, how big is your family, your actual family, your brothers and sisters?
Yeah, my father passed away when I was only 1 year old. And I have a mom and two older brothers and a younger sister.
So I'm sorry to hear about your father. What was your father doing prior?
He was in Pakistan Army.
Okay.
So he was a soldier, and was the death reason was like he passed away through like the heart attack. So
okay.
Yeah.
So what was your mum doing, obviously, to support a young family at that stage?
She's a great lady.
What's her name?
Rahat, and I hope she lives for long for our happiness, for her happiness. I would really pray for her long life. She was a brave young girl, I would say. She was very young when my father passed away, and nothing. Really, really hard because a woman doesn't work there. She was just only went to school. She had like a primary education.
Wow.
And my pension from my father's like a job.
Yes.
And we had like some land as well. So like there was some income from there as well. So
what did you do on the land?
Like just like a cultivation of different crops, I would say wheat and sugar cane, like those things, you know. So it's very fertile land, so give it to someone like to do it for us. So something like that. So it was tough time, early days, but she kept us really together. We all studied nicely. I have done my master degree, my sister done her PhD degree, and my brothers, both they are bachelors. So we studied nicely. We all together, typical like a Pakistani family.
Mm-hmm.
My brothers both married, but they still live with mom in the same house. It's a big house.
In the same house?
In the same house. They got kids, but they still live with mom. So
that must be difficult for you. Like you talked about, the thing you missed is the family, that the family is so close. Whereas here, I guess, you know, my parents live in a state, I might see them twice a year, which I guess is the opposite of what you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. It's hard, but now I'm used to this type of life. I lived alone for a long time. Mm-hmm. Now I've been living here for a long time. And when I went back after a long time, like after 7 years back home, and when I left my home, my brother weren't married, and now then they have kids as well, two kids, and then I thought, oh, the family looks bigger now. There was a lot of like a noise of kids, and you know, I love kids, but there was something different for me. A little bit, I wouldn't say it's annoying, but it took a little bit while to get used to it, because I have been living for long here now, and it's very quiet where I'm living here. Like I live on the Newport Williamstown side, and it's very quiet street as well. So that was a little bit difficult, but it was nice. Still, you miss, you know, the family environment. You know, we don't have privacy, but that's what we love. At one stage, you have to leave. You have to go, and you have your own house. The younger ones stay at home, at mom and dad's home, and he look after mom and dad, but the older one have to go out because the family is growing, you know. So when the kids are growing, they have to move out from the house and to build their own house. And it does work like that back home in Pakistan.
So tell me about your early days before we get to cricket, because it's such a different environment. I'm fascinated by it. Where are you going to school? How are you getting to school? What's a favourite dish that your mum's cooking when you're a little boy growing up? What was life like in northern Pakistan when you were 7, 8, 9, 10, Fuzz?
Life was really beautiful. We live in it's a golden area after Asia, because it's very very fertile. We have a lot of water. We have mountains. We have a beautiful all four seasons, like Australia. That's what we have. We're missing here in Australia. We have mountains. We have rivers. You know, the land is very fertile, and the education is actually pretty good. Wasn't that great when I was there in the schools, but it's been really good now, and the area was really good. We have a lot of schools and colleges, and now we have unis as well. So, just like a normal kid going to school, and luckily I have two older brothers, so I was just looking up to them, and actually was playing hockey in the school.
Hockey?
Field hockey. So, Pakistan was pretty good at that time. And I'm from, actually, hockey is really good over there. So, there's a lot of good hockey players there, and it's easier to play hockey because you can play you don't need a big ground, but you can just make it smaller and you can just play hockey just doing practice. So in the school, that was easier because we didn't have a massive ground like we have here in Australia. And then the reason was when I start playing cricket was I was very young in primary school when Pakistan won the World Cup. I remember a little bit.
At the MCG?
At the MCG, yeah. So
1992. 1992. And Imran Khan. And Mushtaq Ahmed.
When I played my first game, I was disappear. Because we watched that grand final many, many, many times, you know. And that was the first time when we watched a proper colour cricket, you know. I know the cricket was colorful for a long time from Kerry Packer's time, but to the world, you know, there was the first World Cup in color kit, white ball, day-night cricket.
Can you remember watching it?
A little bit, but we watch it again and
on
again. Yeah, the semi-final was great against the New Zealand.
Yes.
And that grand final was really nice as well. Wazim Akram coming from around the stump, taking Alan Lamb. Chris Lewis. Yeah, like those. There was amazing memories. And then I remember when I was, I do remember when I played first at the MCG against the English Lions in 2012, I think.
So in your first game for Victoria.
For Victoria against the English Lions. And it was just disappeared. Yeah, at the G, and when I was playing, and I bowled really well actually in that game as well. And great memories. Then where I start picking up cricket a little bit.
Did you look around the MCG and you think, wow, I'm playing here, this place where I grew up watching this famous game of cricket?
To be honest, every single time I'm going to MCG, I'm just keep loving it more and more. And every single time, I'm just in love with that place. It's people talking about Lords, or, you know, there are beautiful SCG and, you know, historic stadiums. And I said, MCG is something different for me. And I was lucky to call it my home ground as well, played for Victoria.
Because of that Pakistan connection?
No, just playing for Bush Ranger.
Right.
For Victorian team for a long time. So I'm very grateful for that. So
you started to get into cricket then after that?
I was still playing hockey. And the turning point was 1996 World Cup was in Pakistan. And Pakistan was defending champion, and the older superstars going to come. Shane Warne going to come. We heard of Shane. I never saw Shane Warne before, 1996. There is a spinner. He's really good. He's coming to Pakistan to play. And the cricket grounds were far from me. I never been to the cricket ground or cricket stadium to watch international cricket. Never in my whole life in Pakistan. So I did play when I start playing, but I never been to any stadium to watch cricket. They were pretty far from me. So, there was a time. Then I was in the high school at that time, and I was getting closer to finish the school, and then but we still played with the tape tennis. So on the street, there was no cricket ground where I'm from. Still, we don't have any cricket ground. So where I'm from, so that was the problem, and we were playing on the streets and when there was no crops in the on the field, so we just make it like a ground for 1 or 2 months and playing there, or just somewhere on the streets with the tape tennis ball.
The tape tennis ball.
Oh yeah, so that's very famous cricket. It's easier actually.
Were you always a leg spinner or as a young man?
No, when I was younger, we were doing everything. But this, when I started, when the 1996 World Cup finished, I really tried to copy Shane Warne, like in the backyard with my brothers. And then actually we played on the concrete.
Yep.
So there was no spin. Until now, I never seen any spinner with a tape tennis, because it's really hard to spin the ball on the concrete.
Mm.
And the tennis ball is really hard to spin it. But I was in the whole town, I would say in the whole KPK or in the whole province, I was the only spinner. And people just say, oh, you're going to get smashed all the time. But I was literally spinning the ball. And people have never faced a spinner on the tape tennis. So I was actually pretty successful at that time. And I started batting with it as well. So I was pretty good with the bat as well at that time.
Just on that, so Faz, you're playing a tape tennis ball cricket. Is that just, like when we think tape tennis ball cricket, it's in the backyard with our friends. Is that just meeting up with your friends and playing, or is there a competition?
Competition.
Competition.
Yeah, proper competition. So
with the taped up tennis ball.
Yeah, so what we do, we both gonna organize a competition. So we're gonna ask Newport, Williamstown, Yarraville, Footscray, those, they have clubs. So they have own clubs.
Yep.
So they are like a small towns. So Swabi is district, and we have villages. So we have suburbs here. Over there, we have villages.
Right.
So there is a district, and then there's a sub district, it's called Tahsil. And then there are villages. The villages are quite big, like 50,000 people lives in one village. And there is like a union council there. So every per village, they have one team. So maybe 30,000 people, but they have one really good team. So I'm going to organize a competition. Are you happy to join the competition? And there'll be like a 15, 20 and 30 teams coming to join the competition. So proper cricket.
What?
No
whites?
No, just like a freestyle.
Right.
And whatever you do.
How many over comps were they?
At that time, in 90s, there was like around maximum was 16 overs.
Okay.
But then it's come to 12 and 10 overs later. So it's around 10 overs now.
So when did you first bowl?
So we played like a T10.
Yep.
20 years ago already. People, the world is now
catching up,
but I have played T10 like 20 years ago.
You should have copyrighted it. You could have owned the whole of Newport Fuzz. So when did you first start playing with a cricket ball?
So with a cricket ball, I was actually really good with the tape tennis, and then our club was really, really good in the area, in the whole district. Our cricket club was really good. We have some really, really good players, natural talent. And I feel really sorry for them because of the lack of facilities. And we were from rural areas, and I can see that those guys would have played easily for Pakistan or anywhere in the world. They were that good.
But they didn't have the opportunity.
No, nothing. You know, from very a lower class and struggling for, you know, for life and those things. And then you can't play cricket, you know. At that time, it was a little bit easier. The things were going really good. Only one person was earning in the house, and everything was okay. But now it's completely different story. Everyone have to struggle and work, and then you can survive.
So poverty was a big part of life for the general community at that stage.
Yeah, general community. So when I went to college, then I started playing with a cricket. I remember the first time when I bowled with a cricket ball, I realized it's too big and I couldn't bowl with it.
How old were you?
17.
You'd never bowl with a cricket ball till you were 17?
No, never.
And it was
never touched it.
It was it was a bigger ball than the taped up ball?
Because it was old one, and it was like a, with the water it got bigger. It was very old. He says that was kind of a thing, even here as well. They says if you're a spinner, they will give you a really, really, really old ball. go with it. Yeah. So we never get a new war. So it's still the same thing. Thanks to T20 cricket, we can war with a new one now.
So just on that. So you go to college. You obviously did pretty well at school. High school, you must have done well academically at school.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And academically, I was pretty good. So,
and then went to study
college. So we have different, like we follow the British school system. Mm-hmm. So high school, and then the 11 and 12, we call it college, and then the graduation, then uni.
Okay.
So there's like a 3-4 steps. So when I went to college, and then my brother says, "Do you want to play cricket?" And I said, "Well, why not?" So like a first 6 to 10 balls, I couldn't pitch the ball. And then I remembered, I bowled a long ball. I said I could pitch the ball, and then I did it. And then from there, you know, when I got selected, because I spun the ball and they were still on the concrete, there was like a kind of a trials. So they were picking guys from the college team. It was just a college team. No outsider were allowed. And then from there, the wickets were like not that great, you know, on the college level. I was spinning miles, and I took in the competition for the first time in the whole province. We went to the grandfather in the history of our college, and I took the most wickets. And from there, I thought, oh, I can play. And then I played the divisional under-19, and then on the province level. And from there, just I never stopped. And then I kept playing. There was a massive gap between my first-class cricket and their time. And then I played a couple of first-class matches, and then there was another gap. And the year when I was coming to Australia, I played the most of my first-class games in Pakistan, and then where I bowled really well and worked hard and I performed really well.
Back to Fuzz in a moment. Next up on the Howie Games, one of Australia's truly great Olympians, Grant Hackett, a man who was never satisfied with anything but winning.
Your Olympic record, mate, it's phenomenal. 3 golds, 3 silvers and a bronze. And I've heard you talk about your approach to winning before. The 3 silvers and the bronze, are you proud of those or were they missed opportunities?
They're failures.
Are they?
Mm. Every silver medal in my cupboard's a failure.
Wow.
So I think
that's a bit of a downer.
Yeah, sorry to put the conversation like that.
Your face just dropped when I mentioned it. I didn't.
It's funny. I look back on my career. I think over 12 years, I lost the 1500 twice in that whole entire time at every major meet, and that's what I think about in my career. It's just difficult not to, as a performer and a person who has high expectations of themselves. So I still hear those results and I'm disgusted by them, to be honest, because they should be a lot better, but there's not much I can obviously do about them now. But I still look back on them and I think, well, what could have I done better? How could I improve? I'm beyond them now, obviously. You live with them, you move on. But I...
Disgusted is a strong adjective.
Yeah. Well, it's suitable for how I feel towards it.
That's Grant Hackett coming up on the Howie Games on Thursday, January 23. All right, back to Fuzz. So you go through college and then are you working when you're playing cricket or are you going on with further study when you finish college?
No, I kept studying.
So how are you – is that still – do you get a grant to study financially or is this still making do from your father's pension?
Just my family was supporting me.
So it wasn't a great deal of money floating around?
No, it was pretty tough time. Actually, the studies are not that, education is not that expensive.
What were you studying?
I studied international relations.
International relations.
History and like political science and some like the local subject as well, like on the literature side, like Urdu is our national language.
Yep.
So those Islamic studies as well.
And you went on and got a master's.
And then I went on the master's, yeah. So when I finished graduation, then I stopped studying for, I didn't went to uni at that year. And then I start because you were struggling, I went to private school to teach. So there is no requirements like you have any teaching degree or something or education. If you are qualified, if you are a graduate or you have a master degree, you can go on and just teach over there.
So what were you teaching?
Just everything to kids.
And so young kids?
Young kids, yeah, primary school.
So can you tell me...
if you don't mind me asking, what type of pay do you get as a primary school teacher back then?
There was pretty low at that time. I would say around $25 a month.
$25 a month?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
$25 a month.
Yeah.
Wow.
So tough. Very tough, yeah. But I was struggling. I was fighting myself, you know. I said, this is not what you are. You can't just stay here and teach kids, you know. I know I like it, but there was no career there.
Were you in your mind when you were struggling? What did you want to be doing?
I can play cricket, you know. I have potential. And then I didn't play for 1 year. And next year, I think I teach for 1.5 years. And then I have a massive fight at home. And I said, okay, I'm not teaching anymore and I'm going to play cricket. And then...
Now how did that go at home? That's what caused the argument?
Yeah, that was pretty tough. But I said, I will try to support myself through any means.
Who are you arguing with your mom or your brothers?
Mom right. and brothers to whole family. Then they say, we can't see anything, you know, coming out from the cricket. So why you just want to play? Just do something else. They says, if you want to study, study more. Find another job, you know, whatever it is. But what are you going to get from cricket? Because they're not picking you. And that was a problem. I said they will. And next year I played like a district competition, and it happened like in the whole country at the same time. And I finished on the top. I took like a literally 5 wickets in every single game. And from there I got selected for the first class cricket. And there was like a little bit money in that as well.
So who was your first class side?
It's called Abbottabad.
Abbottabad, yeah.
Yeah, famous name.
Yeah.
And that region is called a region. So there are like a lot of districts. So there was 11 districts making one region. So there were like a 12 region in whole country. And I was part of the one region that's called Abbottabad.
And so you played first class cricket for them. Was that a full-time job then? Or
not full-time. Okay. Just like a contract base, just for 2 months.
And how was for that 2 months, how was the $25 a month you were getting as a teacher? Or what was the similar sort of wage you're getting to be a first-class cricketer then at that stage?
Not much, but there is another cricket. It's called departmental cricket.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like a banks. They have their own team, like railway. They have their own team, or customs. They have their own team, or like a NZ Bank or Commonwealth Bank.
Such wonderful names for the teams when it's the customs team or the bank team or the railways.
Yeah, so they say you play for NZ, you play for Commonwealth Bank. You know, so they like a Habib Bank there. There's a National Bank there. There's a State Bank there. They have their own team. So that competition is very strong. And my target was to go there and to play in that competition. And because that competition is strong, there is no limitation. So they can pick two guys from Victoria, I would say like Peter Siddall and James Pattinson. They can pick two good batsmen, Steve Smith and David Warner from Sydney. They will make one team.
Okay.
And it depends on them how much they're going to pay to them, how they're going to approach them.
So it's like the very first type of franchise cricket that we have now in T20 cricket.
It still continues there. I think they are changing now because they are completely going to the Australian domestic structure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was there, like their cricket. And my aim was to play regional cricket, not good money over there. The match fee was $100.
$100 a game for a 4-day game?
4-day game.
Okay.
And it was at that time, $5 was like a daily allowance.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. Nothing else.
Wow.
So $5 a daily allowance for the meals and stuff. And
so you travel around to play. You'd have to go and stay in hotels or?
Yeah. Okay. Hotels and everything. Same like here.
Yep.
Exactly the same.
Yep.
And then the next year I played there was a departmental team, but we were playing 3-day cricket. That's called grade 2.
Uh-huh.
So just below the first class cricket. So they didn't pick me in the first class cricket. I still, the next year below first class cricket, became the most wicket taker, but they picked someone else. They didn't pick me. They said, you didn't perform well because I played one game, I bowled 4 overs. Next game, I think I bowled 11 or 12 overs. That's it. I took 4 wickets in those 2 games and they didn't pick me anymore. Wow. So that was the end. And then I played, a little bit lower cricket and they were paying reasonably well. So there was like, they were paying me $150 per month.
Per month?
Yeah, per month. So $150 at that time.
So when you didn't get selected in those first class sides, in your mind, was this the beginning of the end of your cricket dream or no?
No, I was kept playing. I was working hard. I said, I'm in the system now. Everyone knows me. Someone gonna watch and someone gonna pick me, you know, that's how good I am and how I'm performing well, you know, so they can have a look under my previous performances.
Because it's funny you say that, because that's long been the history of Pakistan cricket, hasn't it? All of a sudden, a guy turns up at a World Cup in the nets and Imran will have seen him or Wasim will have been at a game and all of a sudden they're playing for Pakistan. So I guess that opportunity is still there because the pathway is very different.
Yeah, 100% it's still there. So,
is it?
Yeah, it's still there and it happens, you know.
Huh.
The guy's coming from nowhere. Like I would say the current opening batsman, Fakhar Zaman.
Yeah.
He was like in Pakistan Navy and he was just working there and playing.
In the Navy?
Yeah, and he was just playing like a normal cricket and then suddenly he started performing well within 1 year and he just became the part of the Pakistan team now.
Wow.
And he's a really, really good player.
My word, he is.
Yeah, so like those stories are still there. You will see a lot of talented guys, they're coming from nowhere and they will just come and play for Pakistan. So I was just playing and then there was I bowled really well in those tournaments, you know, below first class cricket and then I got picked for Pakistan Customs cricket team. That was a first class and that was my second chance to play first class and I bowled really well that year. That was 2009 when I was coming to Australia. And then we have a lot of problems back home in the area, you know, like the war on terrorism, you know, we got affected badly, the whole country. I would say since 9/11, but it got worse when, you know, if you remember Benazir Bhutto?
Yes, I do.
When she got
assassinated.
Yeah, and it was 2007. And that was the country went really, really down like this.
How?
Perpendicular.
Describe
well, there was
it to
riots
me.
And there was like a, just everything went bad. I think there was kind of a, I'm sorry to say, it was kind of a curse on the country, you know, like she got assassinated, you know, without any reason. And then since that, we were struggling as a country. Before that, we were pretty good.
Mm.
And since that time, it's just gone down and down and still keep going down and down. And that was a really bad time. The suicide bombing was on the top. You would have really, like, the country was growing nicely. It was beautiful. Economy was growing, you know. And after 9/11, but till 2010 it was still good, and then it complete change. There was like a massive web of terrorism in the country. And
what's that like to live through when there's suicide bombings and terrorism? We're very lucky here that generally, not always now in the modern world, but generally we read that and it's on the other side of the world. It's obviously having greater effect everywhere now. What's it like to actually live in an environment like that, Fuzz?
It's pretty hard. It's just not where you live. Maybe you are in the safe corner of the country, but it depends what kind of person you are. If you have a soft side and you know, inside your body, and then you're thinking of there's a bomb blast in the mosque or in the shopping mall, and there's like 100 people killed.
Oh.
How am I gonna take that? How am I gonna go to sleep? How am I gonna go next day to work? You watch like. And that was 4 or 5 years ago. The few guys went to the school in Peshawar,
yep,
remember?
I do.
They killed 152 kids. And they, like, if you blew them up, you know, it's still not good. I'm not saying it's still good. But the thing, you're going in, how you can raise, like, point a gun on a 5 or 4 year old or 6 year old and killing them? Like, where are you coming from? I don't know what you're fighting for. And, neither my family, neither my friends' family, no one I knew that was part of that incident, you know. But there were so many incidents like that, you know. But I literally cried on that day so much when I was here in Australia. But how in the world you can point a gun on the kid and you're killing them? And they burn the principal of the college in front of the kids.
Mm.
What about the survivors? How are they going to live? How are they going to carry that burden on their head for the rest of their lives? You know, like if you have seen your mate got killed in front of your eyes, your principal got burned they in front of them. And it's just, even I haven't seen anything of them, but I just like I felt so bad, you know, like, and then I wanted to do something, you know, like, and then you're helpless. And I still want to do a lot. Like people saying, oh, you live here, you live a good life here. But I said, I love both countries. I born there, my childhood there, my family is still there, my relatives, my friends, everything belonged to me. I'm still dreaming of Pakistan. I haven't started dreaming of Australia yet.
Mm.
So I'm still belong to that place. But I love, like, how, this how you love your mom and dad. And this how I love Australia and Pakistan. But I still want to do a lot of things here in Australia as well to give back to the country, because people really loved me here. I got the opportunity, but I really want to help what I can do. I'm good at cricket, but I can coach someone. I can teach someone leg spinning, like those things, you know, to give. I want to see someone that I can coach them and to play for Australia for long term in test cricket. But I want to do something for Pakistan as well, back there for the people of Pakistan. You know, if I'm having the opportunity, maybe just to build a hospital or maybe just to build a cricket academy there. And free of cost, you know, there is no cricket academy in my hometown, and I can go there and can build a cricket academy there. Then the way I suffered over there, you know, in my childhood and at my young age, so everyone can have a better facility and they can fulfill their dreams. So
what language do you dream in?
Oh, pretty interesting question.
Yeah.
I never realized about the even when I was coming, we built a new house. I never dream about even that house either. My old childhood house. I'm still dreaming about that home.
Right. But what language do you dream in? Do you dream in English?
I think it's Pashto.
So you'll dream in Pashto?
That's my mother tongue.
Okay.
So we speak that. That's called Afghani language.
Yep.
So we're actually Afghan.
Yep.
But we part of the Pakistan, because in 1892, British government leased our state from Afghanistan, and then when Pakistan came into being, we became the part of. So we on the both side of the border, we speak same language called Pashto. It's Afghani language.
So the trouble you're speaking about, how did this start to impact you? Obviously, it impacted you enormously because you ended up in Australia. But Faz, what was the lead up? What were you doing, and what started to happen to you personally?
Yeah, it was tough. As I said, the things were really bad over there. As I started working on the women education, there was like a NGO, non-government organization. One of my friends was running that, and they were getting some aid from overseas to educate, especially the older women. Not older, but the one they have never been to school, and they are moms now. They are at home. They never went out to work or something. So our plan was actually to educate them, especially if you educate a mom, that's a preschool for kid. And if the mom is educated, that's the main thing. Because when the kid's going to school, everyone's starting school at around five-year-old or four-year-old, you know. And if you have nothing learned in those 4 or 5 years, then it's really hard to take a start, and then where the downfall start after the kid, you know.
So you're behind already.
So you're behind already.
So what was your role within that NGO?
Just to help and go around and to build schools and to give them aid and to find teachers to facilitate them, to give them a little bit salary, you know. There was no timing, like in the afternoon or in the evening, you know, that if maybe only 1 hour, 2 hour, but it's still good enough that they can learn, you know. So it's just a little bit to get educated. Even if they can watch TV, they can understand. If they can read something, you know, they didn't even know how to like read A, B, C, D.
Mm-hmm.
So most of them, like especially on the women's side, it's really good now. It's completely different. But at that time, we would have said like they couldn't even read anything. You know, they're still in the rural areas, far rural areas in the mountains where it's like a no such facilities. Education is no good there. So it's really hard. And the girls are getting married pretty young, like 18, 20-year-old, 22-year-old, you know. So they're finishing school in primary school just as a habit, everyone going to school, but they never intended to study there. So it's just to look in. But one of our team leader, he got kidnapped as well. He got threatened to stop working there to educate the women.
So who he got kidnapped, Fuzz, excuse my ignorance here, but who is kidnapping him?
I don't know. They people say Taliban. I wouldn't call them Taliban. You know, like there was no Taliban at their time, nothing like that. But there was like a terrorist. The terrorists don't like people to get educated.
Right.
If you are educated, you know everything. You ask questions. But if you are ignorant, whatever I tell you, you believe me.
Wow.
You know? And that's how it was in the whole world. If you go anywhere, yep. And it's the same thing. If you say anything to young kids, they will believe you because they don't know anything. But as soon as they are growing and they are getting educated, then they ask questions because they're studying, they're reading, they're watching, you know, like those things. So that's awareness and comes and then they're going to ask questions. But
so what happened to the team leader?
And then he got released by the police and, you know, the rangers and those guys. But there was more threats. There was like you're getting phone calls and you're getting like letters and stuff, you know, and they just threaten you. And they says, wherever you are, we're going to find you. And that's just the phone call make you like a really scared, you know, like.
So you were getting these phone calls?
Everything. Everyone's was getting, you know, and they says, if you do this, same thing going to happen. We're not going to let you go anywhere. And then, what's going to happen then? So that happened on like on a very vast, not just to those NGOs, like and a lot of other stuff as well. And the people just got scared, you know, to work like those things, you know. And even if you are a volunteer, I was a volunteer and I was playing cricket and I was volunteering. I wasn't getting anything from there. And then I thought, what's going to happen? You know, like I was good enough to, because I was playing cricket, good cricket at that time. And I have had a master degree and I can move around nicely. Mm. You know, I could have hired anywhere. You know, I wanted to go away from the home then. You know, I decided this is the, and even I played really good cricket at that year. I took wickets as well. And then I thought I'm getting closer to play for Pakistan. And, you know, unfortunately, from the other part of the country, no one wanted to come to play in our state. Like people from Karachi and Lahore, they says, no, we're not going to play in Peshawar. That's the capital of our province.
It's too dangerous.
Yeah, too dangerous for a long time. So we hardly played home games. Even in our own country, we're playing away games. So like you don't play at the MCG, you're just playing away in New South Wales and WA and South Australia.
So I asked you before, easy questions to ask, not necessarily easy to answer, Fuzz. I asked you before about what it's like when you're living in a country that has suicide bombers or car bombs. What's it like when you're personally being threatened for your life?
It's really hard. Actually, in early days, it was really hard because it was something new in the country as well. We were a very safe country, you know, like till, I would say, 9/11. Specifically, but I think that then 2005, after 2007, it got worse. And around 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, that was the worst year. Those 5, 6 years was the worst. It's getting really good now.
Yep.
It's been really, really good. But yeah, it was tough. It was really tough. People were not used to. And then I don't know. It's a human nature. Are we getting a habit or anything? But people then were getting used to. Even when I came here, I was still like getting scared. You know, my family there, my friends is, one of my friends got killed as well in the bomb blast as well. And then in the suicide bomb blast, and there was like a terrible one up. My friend got kidnapped. He was a good cricketer. He was a good first-class cricketer. He took, I think, more than 300 wickets and he was almost close to play for Pakistan. He got kidnapped and got killed as well.
He got killed?
Yeah, got killed. Yeah. And
What was he seen to have been doing wrong?
I don't know. No one knows. Just this is, there was pretty bad at that time.
So he was murdered?
He was murdered. Yeah, and no one knew until now. We don't know anything about it. And it's just disappeared. He was such a good player. And the thing was really, really very unfortunate. It's such a beautiful country. If you ever get a chance, you should visit. You know, it's like a heaven on earth. You know, you will get to see there's like a ocean, there's like a deserts, there's mountains, there's glaciers, there's everything there in the jungles, you know. We got everything in that country. So many natural resources there, you know, like on every side is so much potential in that country, you know, and the people, and there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of like a natural resources. There's absolutely beautiful country. And there's a lot of geopolitical things around that because it's a very strategic place as well, because we have on the border Afghanistan, we have India, we have Kashmir problem, you know, for a long time. We have Iran on the border. We have China on the border. And then we have Soviet Union at that time and now Russia there. You know, everyone's got interest in Pakistan. They're just right in the middle. So there's a lot of other things as well, because I have studied political science and international relations, so I can look to the things on the other side as well. I don't want to discuss political things here, but there's a lot of things involved in that. It's just not the country itself. It's just not the people itself. There's a lot of other things are involved. We are lucky here in Australia. We don't have neighbors, but we have some really, really different and strange and strong and neighbors. You know, we have some serious issues there from the beginning when we got the independence there in Pakistan.
So when you're talking about this beautiful, beautiful country that your family live in, that it's all you've ever known, how difficult a decision is it to say, I'm going to leave?
Seriously hard. I wanted to play for Pakistan. I wanted to stay with my mom because my mom, she struggled really hard. Imagine living in a country where you can't work, you can't go out from the house. There was no support. I got two uncles, you know, my dad brothers, they were separate. They have their own family problems. There was no one to support. We were all young. I was 1 year old. And then she survived. And then you are at the top edge to support her. And then you are leaving, you know. So
what did you say to her?
Well, stop. I said, she was happy for me as well. Because at the end, she's a mom.
Yep.
She wants whatever best for me. She wanted this, what she wanted. And she missing me a lot, you know. She still miss me now.
Do you remember saying to her, I can't stay here any longer?
Yeah,
this is
what I told her. Yeah, I have to leave, you know. Yeah, there is no other way. And Australia wasn't meant to be. Luckily, I'm very lucky. I'm very grateful and thankful. I'm in such a beautiful country. I belong to such two beautiful countries. I'm so grateful.
So where were you? What was the plan?
One of my friends, he used to play club cricket here, and we were playing together in the same team back home in the regional cricket. And he said, I'm not going to Australia to play cricket. Do you want to go? I said, yes. I want to go anywhere. I just want to go. And he said, okay. And then actually the club was in, what's the town name in New South Wales? Griffith.
Griffith?
Yeah. So the club was in Griffith, and it's called the association called Ugali Cricket Association.
Ugali.
I remember.
So you've got on a plane in Pakistan, and you've flown to Sydney?
Yeah. No. What happened? We got our visa very late. So I applied in September 2009.
A visa to come here and play cricket?
Yeah, to play cricket, just to get away. Okay. I wanted to get away from the country. I asked people to go to England or to Dubai or to anywhere, you know. So, but I intended, there was like in the side of my head, I was thinking anywhere where I can play cricket, you know.
Yeah, England, so Dubai, that would have worked.
It's not cricket. Just, you know, but you think, you know, like for your own favor. You know, you wanted to go to do something, but you said, oh, if I can do this as well, why not?
Mm.
You know, so would have been really good for me if I can play cricket, you know, somewhere, just not to play for the country or somewhere, just like on the side, because that's what I love, you know. And I played a really good, like a good first-class cricket in Pakistan. That was a top quality cricket. And I said, okay, if I can play, you know, this, I'm still very young. I'm in 20s and I can play anywhere, you know.
That's the end of Farwood Ahmed Part A. See you on the other side with Part B.
And we can do it if we try, try, try. If we try, try, try. If we try, try, try.
Listener.